Preventing suicide is one of society's greatest challenges. That's why the Flint Hills Volunteer Center has developed this Suicide Awareness Pact podcast. PACT stands for Prevention, Awareness, Compassion, Training. This Suicide Awareness Pact podcast will feature personal stories and professional perspectives. This podcast series is funded in part by the Kansas Health Foundation, AmeriCorps Seniors, and the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. Our hope is to touch hearts and provide hope amidst despair. Please follow us wherever you get your podcasts and share them with those you know that are seeking help and hope. Our website and contact information is included in the show notes.
Welcome to another episode of Suicide Pact, and we have had, Lori, just some wonderful responses so far from our podcast series.
We have. It's actually gone better than what I really dreamed of it to be. This was something near and dear to my heart. And so after 10 years of me not talking about losing my son, I just felt the time was right that we get together and we share stories, whether it's those of us moms who've lost a child versus those that are struggling with mental illness, suicidal thoughts, depression, addiction, so on and so forth. And so our podcasts have been very welcoming. People have reached out from all over the state of Kansas. And so we're real excited about that.
And we encourage all of our listeners to follow, subscribe, and share with anybody that you feel that, you know, this story may be able to connect to. Now, today we have a guest who has quite a background with a lot of different things. Her name is Doncha McDonald, and we're delighted to have you here, Doncha.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Explain a little bit about your journey and your history with anxiety, depression, and anything that you have going on in your life.
Well, it's not only anxiety and depression, though those can be very serious and very debilitating for people. My diagnosis is schizoaffective disorder, which is on the schizophrenia spectrum. I had a normal life. I went to college, got married. I was working in the film industry in San Francisco, and then I had a Fulbright to the Czech Republic, and I just stopped being able to function gradually. And then by the time I was about 34, I started experiencing delusions where I couldn't tell the difference between reality and imagination. I would have all these stories in my head about what was happening. I explain it to people as if somebody gave me a newspaper with false stories in it. Because of my beliefs, I began to behave very erratically, but everything made sense in my mind. And this went on for about 2.5 years. I didn't believe I was sick. Everyone around me was trying to get me help. My family was trying to get me help. It was really bad. And then I eventually agreed to take a medication, and my delusions went away in 3 hours. Wow. After 2.5
wow.
years.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I was basically allergic to that medicine.
Oh.
And the doctors weren't hearing me about the side effects, but they were really intolerable, so I quit taking it. I didn't become delusional right away. I moved to Kansas. My father was a professor at K-State, and so I lived with my mom and my dad. The delusions didn't come back right away, but I was very suicidal because I was getting a divorce. I had lost everything. I had been fired. I had been evicted. Friends had dropped me, and I just couldn't process that I had such a severe mental illness. And I have a brother who has schizophrenia, and he is medicated but still very sick. So I thought I really was going to lose everything. So I went through a period of deep suicidality.
You mentioned that your brother also deals with schizophrenia. Is it something that is hereditary, or is it just—
It can be hereditary. It is hereditary. What they believe is there's a gene, but something triggers it. Because identical twins, sometimes one will become schizophrenic and the other one will not. So it's kind of both. Like, I think what happened for me, I also have ADHD, which is really the only thing I really suffer from right now. I was taking Adderall, which is it's a stimulant. Mm-hmm. It's close to speed. I believe that's what triggered it. So I don't take that anymore. which is unfortunate for the organizing part of my life.
And sometimes I understand that we have to watch what medications we take because of the reactions that you can get from some of those medications to treat depression or suicidal thoughts and stuff like that. So that's always really important. So how are you doing now?
I'm doing great now. My delusions have been completely gone since January 17th, 2015,
awesome.
When I got on the right medication. It was a hard journey back. I had a lot of shame, had embarrassed myself in extreme ways, like screaming in the middle of the street. I went to jail for a night for criminal trespass because I ran into kites one too many times to scream about the CIA. And they banned me, but I didn't understand it. And the police were telling me, don't go there. And my delusions were so out there that I thought, oh, that's a message. I need to go to kites. And so I went and I just walked in and they came to get me and I ran away. It was a big drama. And so I ended up in jail for a night. So these things were very different sort of identity. Like, how do you process who you are if you're like kind of a high achiever and then all of a sudden you're part of a group that society really doesn't respect or care about much.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
I wanted to touch on that subject too, because we talk when and we're talking to different people about this, and when we've talked about the stigma that's associated with that, the stigma of those that are suicidal, those that have a drug addiction, those that have depression, there's kind of like a stigma, and we're trying to break away from that and have people be more understanding of those, I call it in crisis, or whatever that they are going through. So do you think times have changed any?
I think things are getting a lot better, especially with young people through social media. I think that's one of the positive things that social media has brought, that more people are talking about mental health and more people are open to it. I think the stigma for severe mental illness, like psychosis and delusions and hallucinations and hearing voices, is still very strong. People are scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was scared of it. I had a lot of self-stigma. Maybe it was stigma against my brother. You know, I didn't want that life. I didn't want to be part of this group. And I made things a lot harder on myself by my own stigma against. But it's in the culture. Now I know tons of people with severe mental illness, and I realize what the culture taught me about people with severe mental illness is not really accurate.
Yeah.
For most of the people, for like 98% of them, that they're violent, that they're evil and freakish. It's not true. There is an outlier every once in a while. You'll hear about some violence, but I know hundreds of people with severe mental illness. And we even had a conference with like 120 people with severe mental illness in Wichita this summer. It happens every summer. And it's like, here we are for 2 days and nothing dramatic happens. And there's 100 people with schizophrenia or you know, other diagnoses.
Again, that's kind of why I wanted to do this, so that we do bring this out. I know 13 years ago when my son passed away, you just didn't hear about suicide and you didn't hear about those that are struggling with issues of that. Everybody, I kept it hidden, you know, but to me, 13 years later, you hear more, and there's a lot of professionals in the area now that are offering counseling and resources with the new 988 hotline as well. So I was just curious about your thoughts on that. But you're also, have you taken some of those struggles that you have into a new life, a new job opportunity?
Yeah, I work at Morningstar, which is a small nonprofit for people with mental illness. Everyone who works there has a mental illness, so it creates a feeling of power sharing, power balance, and I would say a lot of work we do is healing stigma and self-stigma. You know, we're not therapists. We're not trying to take, everybody still goes to a therapist. Everybody still sees a doctor. But we do something different. We have groups and activities, and we kind of have a family environment and we help people take some of the healthy risks to create fulfilling lives, even if they still have symptoms. Not everybody, the medication is not there yet. So everybody just takes a pill and you're better. And we encourage people to stay on medication. We're pro-medication.
I just knew some of it. I didn't know a whole lot about the organization.
So we have groups like anxiety and depression groups, NAMI connection group, anger management.
Is this where people just kind of get together and share?
Yeah. Oh. We just get together and talk about what's going on in our lives. And
do you think that helps for your clients that are coming in and doing that by having the opportunity to meet within that setting?
Yeah, it's always amazing when we get somebody who's like very newly diagnosed and they're so overwhelmed with shame and they think their life is over and they think they're undesirable as a worker or a girlfriend or boyfriend and that they'll, you know. Yeah. So we can help in that situation very quickly. People like hang out with us one afternoon and they feel more optimistic about life.
Yeah. And I've noticed that with us, those of us mothers who've lost a child, I've developed a lot of friendships along the way, but we feel like collectively we can feel free to share with each other. We know that person's going to understand our feelings and stuff. So I like that idea where you can come in and have that discussion.
We do understand each other. You know, we learn from our clients too. I'm like, oh, that's like me. I have many things to be proud of, but somehow I can turn everything negative. And this, I could see it in somebody else doing it and see it in myself. So the people who come in help us too.
Let's go back and talk a little bit about some of the suicidal tendencies, the thoughts that you had, and how you dealt with those.
I would say I dealt with them in the worst possible way. I didn't tell anyone. Right after when I got out of the hospital in California and went off that med that worked, but I had a bad reaction to. I was heading towards the Golden Gate Bridge one day, and I was going to die by suicide, and I got lost. My therapist called. I didn't tell her I was suicidal. I went in and saw her, but she treated me like I was still a worthy human being. And that got me through those couple of really bad days, but I still was very suicidal for a long time when I moved to Kansas.
Do you think people tend to keep that inside because they don't want others to know?
Yeah, I did. I didn't call a suicide hotline.
I was the same way, yeah.
I didn't tell anyone at all. I think my parents were very helpful. I had family support. I think that makes all the difference. And they didn't pressure me. They encouraged me to get a job, but I kind of rebelled and just threw away the applications. And they let me just do my own thing. And they supported me. You know, I lived with them. They made meals for me. And I'm a contrary person. So I think if they had pushed me in any way, it would have triggered that I might have actually attempted a suicide. They let me do my own thing. And the weird thing that got me out of it was delusions. I became delusional again. And I became very grandiose. I thought I was running the CIA. I thought I had all these important missions. So I wasn't depressed anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just grateful to be here. And it was a real deep suicidal depression. And
when you speak about this and everybody we've had on, I don't think other people understand what some go through and what they're going through and all that. And it's like, that's why we got to be more open and welcoming for those that do go through some of these struggles, because unless you go through it or know somebody that's gone through it, you don't understand. And so I think this awareness is really helping with everybody's stories and what they're doing. I think the public can see from all the ones we did, they're all so different, but then they're all so alike. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
There's a lot of truth to that. And that's one of the things that I was going to ask, if you had some recommendations that you could pass along from your experiences, Dantia.
I think just the idea that not everything you think is true. I was sure there was no hope for me. I was worried. I got a $20,000 doctor's bill from my time in San Francisco when I had insurance. My ex-husband was a professor at a state school. Like, I should have, it was supposed to be good insurance. So financially, I didn't think I would get a job. I didn't think I would ever get out of debt. I didn't think anybody would ever date me knowing I had a mental illness. And just these beliefs were so strong, and most of them, almost all of them, were not true. I just didn't have hope. If you're really depressed, you're sick, and your brain, you can't trust what your brain is telling you. But I don't know if that helps other people who are in that. But just so many beliefs about myself and my future just were completely untrue. But I don't think, even if I had told anybody about those beliefs, they could have, my mother tried to convince me otherwise. And she would say, just because you're not going to have the life you thought you were going to have doesn't mean you're not going to have a good life.
But now you're in a good
place.
And
now I believe that. My life is totally different than what I thought it would be. And just knowing that people have been to that dark place, and really, after all these years, to discover everything. I'm married. I have beautiful stepchildren. I love my job. I'm writing a book.
That's great. Yeah.
Kind of fancy writing program. Like, none of, I didn't believe any of that was possible for me. I was sure it was impossible.
It's the book about your experiences.
Yeah.
So do you volunteer or work for the NAMI organization? And if you tell a little bit about that.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness is a nonprofit group. It's national, and there's a Kansas chapter, and there's also a Flint Hills chapter. We have support groups, and we're doing one of those support groups in the Riley County Jail for people who are incarcerated and have mental health concerns. And
do you meet one-on-one with them or?
No, it's a group. We're doing it over Zoom because of COVID. We're going to start doing it in person very soon. And unfortunately, jail and prison are part of our mental health system. Many people end up in jail and prison. My brother was in prison. My brother was schizophrenia. He was on probation for writing a bad check, and he kept breaking the law in little ways. Like, he got busted for a little marijuana. He stole the bottle of tequila from a drugstore. Like, not good things, but not serious things. But he kept breaking probation. So he ended up in prison for like 2.5 years. And he got jumped by the correction officers there. And they knocked out some teeth and gave him a concussion, and he ended up in solitary confinement over Y2K weekend, where he was already paranoid about Y2K and without any medication, and he hallucinates. And so this jail and prison thing has been close to my heart. This all happened before I was sick. So that's also kind of the future I thought I was going into. You know, we've had these bad experiences with what happened to my brother. It's really important to me to do this work. And the people we're working with, some of them have done bad things, but it's amazing how much trauma they have experienced. You know, people who grew up in foster care or had abusive parents, or just a lot of, they've done bad things, but they've had a lot of trauma in their life. And sometimes you really feel like you're changing somebody's life, like somebody is choosing a better path.
It just takes one person to make a difference. And that's what we're hoping also with this podcast, the awareness of stuff. It just takes one person. And I feel like we're a success if we've reached out through all of this, and then one person reached out, which we've heard. I've just heard recently of several now that are in counseling from hearing these podcasts. And I can't tell you how proud that makes me. And knowing this great idea I had is coming to fruition, and we're saving lives one person at a time. And so your information today, I think, could really make a difference and have another one seek help. So
Yeah, I really do hope people seek help, because if one thing I've learned from my time being very suicidal is, like I said, you can't believe your thoughts or your predictions for the future. Everything I believed terrible about my future has not come true.
That's good to hear.
Dantia, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's profound. And it takes a certain amount of intestinal fortitude, a lot of courage to share your story. And we certainly hope that, you know, you continue on good paths. It sounds like you're really in a good spot and got a lot of good things working for you. And that's delightful to hear. And I think our listeners need to hear that encouraging aspect.
Thank you for joining us. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
We hope you or someone you love can benefit from this series. If you need help, reach out to the many resources available. Many are listed in our show notes. The Flint Hills Volunteer Center Suicide Awareness Pact podcast series is funded in part by the Kansas Health Foundation, AmeriCorps Seniors, and the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts and share them with those you know that are seeking help and hope.